from Lifestone. We seek the Silverneth. We need their help. The disembodied voice snorted, whether with anger or amusement, Thanis couldn't guess.
You seek the Silverneth. You have found them. But we do not give aid to lost creatures.
We're not lost, Thanis said, standing over Elio. Our friend is sick. We were told you could hear...
No!
The voice thundered furiously.
We are the guardians of the forest. We do not tend to weak and foolish mortals.
Alice started to protest, but a mass of vines came snaking suddenly from the mist and latched onto her wrists and ankles, pulling her down towards those hideous sucking mouths. They grabbed Casper too, yanking him off his feet. He yelled for Thanis, kicking and fighting.
Let go of my friends!
Thanis cried, swinging the staff and swiping blindly at the vines as they coiled towards her. One had hold of her foot, trying to tuck her down. Instinctively, she reached for Kiri, gripping the girl's wrist. Kiri stumbled, grabbing at Thanis, and in that moment something happened. Kiri's eyes went wide with surprise. Do you feel that? Thanis nodded. There was a strange sensation growing inside of her. A kind of confidence travelling inwards from her wrist to her heart. Looking down, she saw that Kiri's hand was tight around her birthmark and that her own hand was locked around Kiri's. Thanis grinned as the feeling increased, setting her nerves alight. Then Kiri broke free, swung her catapult around her and let loose. One of the vines holding Alice snapped in two, spewing green sap. Thanis drove the staff into the ground, piercing the soft surface of the plant. The living structure shook and groaned, those awful mouths opening and closing as though in pain. The vines let go of Alice and Casper and finally Elio, snaking away into the mist. Kiri lifted the boy to his feet. His head was lolling, his mouth slack. Thanis helped her carry him across the clearing, back into the thick of the forest. She could still feel that strange energy inside her. It wasn't a new strength, she realised. It had been there all along. It was as though a door had been opened when she and Kiri linked arms, allowing power to come through. Then Alice gasped, staring up into the branches. Something stood blocking their way, something vast and dark and motionless. There were eyes in it, huge and silver green, watching them. Casper took a step back, his hand on his chest. Kiri reached for Thanis and she saw her own feelings reflected in her friend's face. Fear, amazement and wide-eyed wonder. The figure before them was sheathed in dry bark like a bronzewood tree with a crown of tangled thorns and huge, root-like feet. But most trees didn't have long outstretched arms, and they certainly didn't speak.
We took you for Dwarden, the Silverneth said, when we first saw your flying machine. But now we see you are human children. Tell me. How did you free yourself from the dragon flower?
Thanis and Kiri let Elio down as gently as they could and placed their hands on their weapons.
They're afraid, Strongstem, said another voice, softer and more musical, like raindrops on a hollow log. You have terrified them. A second Silverneth emerged from the brush. This one was shorter and more slender, with shoot green limbs and eyes the colour of gillyflowers. Her voice and form were somehow feminine, and in the shadows behind her, Thanis thought she saw other shapes, small and green like saplings. Silverneth children? Was such a thing possible? The newcomer pointed to the black symbol on Kiri's wrist.
It was these marks that gave them the strength, she said. Realm runes, Strongster. These are no ordinary children, she turned to them. How did you come by these marks?
We were born with them, Kiri said. We're not completely sure what they mean, Thanis added. Our master, his name was V.
Casper squeezed her arm, shaking his head. We shouldn't trust them, he whispered. We don't know what they want. Alice stepped forward, gesturing to Elio, who lay slumped on the mossy floor.
Look, our friend is sick. He was wounded with warpstone. Can you help him?
The first Silverneth gave a grunt.
I told you, we do not heal humans. Plants, yes, and growing things. But not chopping, burning mortals.
We haven't burned anything, Alice protested.
Elio loves plants and trees and all that stuff. He's a good boy. You can't just let him die.
The slender Sylvaneth knelt, her stem-like fingers brushing the wound on Elio's forehead. He stirred, whimpering, and the Sylvaneth's eyes narrowed. She glanced back at her companion, and somehow Thanis knew they were communicating, speaking without words. Suddenly, the Sylvaneth laid her hands on the earth, opening her fingers wide. Green shoots snaked from their tips, twisting towards Elio, wrapping gently around him. Thanis started forwards, but the Sylvaneth shook her head.
Do not be afraid. I will not harm him.
The roots tucked in close around the boy, and as the Sylvaneth stood, he was lifted from the floor, cocooned in a green cradle.
My name is Lithroot, she said, placing him across her shoulder. I am what we call a branch witch, familiar with the ways of both natural and unnatural magic. The wound your friend bears is most unusual. It has a power that is known to us.
She beckoned to them.
My tree lord Strongstem has agreed that you may follow us. There is a glade nearby where he can rest and talk.
So you'll help him? Kiri asked.
The tree lord turned away.
If you agree to do as we ask, we shall consider it. For now, just be content to follow.
He moved off, his footsteps shaking the ground.
Sorry, Mr. Strongstem, Alish called out. What about my airship? What if something tries to eat it?
The tree lord did not turn around.
It will be safe. Not a leaf moves in this forest without my permission.
As he strode away, Thanis looked sideways at Kiri. She could feel eyes in the branches, the whole forest seeming to close in watchfully. Do you ever get that feeling you're making a really big mistake? She whispered. Kiri pocketed a catapult. I know, but what choice have we got? She asked. We're here for Elio. And she stepped forwards, pushing into the wall of trees.
Chapter 4. The Elmheart Glade. The sun was low to the horizon now, and the evening shadows were lengthening around them. Even these seemed strange to Thanis, coiling and shifting as though with a mind of their own, making phantom shapes between the branches. Strongstem set a fast pace, stepping easily over hunched boulders and yawning chasms that the children had to clamber over or find a way around. Thanis had noticed that there was a cloud of insects buzzing around the tree lord, darting between the boughs and outgrowths that sprouted from his arms and his head. They seemed to be communicating with one another, screeching and chattering in a language she'd never heard. She felt something on her bare arm and peered down. One of the creatures crouched on her elbow, silver wings fluttering hypnotically. It wasn't an insect at all, but something far stranger. Its many-faceted eyes bright in a grinning, weirdly human face. She watched it, fascinated. Then suddenly, the creature lowered its head, exposing a row of thorny fangs and sinking them into her skin. Thanis cried out in pain and surprise, swiping the creature away. It took to the air, yammering irritably.
We call them spites, the branch witch explained, striding alongside. They mean no harm.
It bit me, Thanis protested, rubbing her elbow.
You are strange to them, Lithroot explained. Perhaps it simply wanted to know what you are made of.
Thanis put her head down and kept walking, as if the talking trees and giant killer flowers weren't enough. Now she had nasty little biting things to contend with. She'd suspected all along that there was nothing outside the city walls worth knowing about, and now she was sure of it. The light faded and the moon rose, and now the forest became truly unsettling. A trackless labyrinth of shifting shadows and shimmering far-off lights. Strongstem was just a dark shape among deeper shades. The only way they could follow him was by the sound of his footfalls.
When will we sleep? Kiri asked. We can't keep going forever.
Sylvaneth, do not sleep, Strongstem said without slowing.
That's not an answer, Kiri pointed out.
But it wasn't long before Thanis felt a change in the air, a sweeter scent on the breeze and a warm glow beneath the branches. Strongstem bowed beneath a canopy of low-hanging trees. Then he straightened, holding out his arms.
Behold, he said, the Elmheart Glade.
Thanis stepped in beside him, and her breath stopped.
The glade was vast, larger than the Athenaeum, the trees like spires craning inwards, and the tips of their massive branches touching high above. Below was a carpet of silver grass, and everywhere she looked she saw Sylvaneth. Slender tree revenants with their bladed scythes and horn-crested dryads with countless tangled limbs, all surrounded by clouds of chattering spites and showers of shimmering fire moths. But all of them were dwarfed by the figure in the centre of the glade, so tall that its highest branches were twined into the roof. At first, Thanis thought it was another Sylvaneth, massive but motionless. Then she realised it was a statue formed from living wood, a lattice of trees and shrubs and slender sproutlings all shaped to resemble a woman. The trunks of her legs were knotted with roots, her outstretched arms were wreathed with vines, and her mouth burst with flowers, like a song of colour. She wielded an outgrowing blade of mahogany, blacker than the deepest forest shadows.
Alerial, Alish whispered, gazing in wonder.
The Ever Queen, Lythrit acknowledged, her eyes sparkling. She of the Sylvaneth. We come from all across the realm to pay tribute to the Elmheart statue. There was a horrible battle here once, long ago, though I am too green to recall it.
I am not, Strongstem said, rumbling with centuries-old anger. The poison bringers came with fire and disease to blight the trees and the very soil in which they grew. With Elariel's blessing, we drove them back, though the victory came at great cost. The statue marks the place where the final doom came.
His voice was weary with sorrow for all those who had fallen, and it gave Thanis a sense of how long the Sylvaneth had endured here, how many years they had fought against the darkness that still threatened Gyron. The great war that she was only just beginning to perceive.
I must bear your friend away, Lythrit said, cradling Elio as he lay unconscious. And you should all rest. You'll have a long day tomorrow.
The tree lord rumbled in agreement.
A long day indeed, he said, gesturing to a quiet corner of the glade beneath the shadow of a long-growing laurel-wort bush. Before your friend can be healed, you must fulfill your obligation.
They looked at one another, and Thanis could see the others fighting back their doubts. She turned to Strongstem and nodded firmly.
We'll do whatever you want. Just please, help him.
The morning seemed to come swiftly, pale shafts of sunlight slanting into the glade. Thanis awoke with a cry, feeling a sharp nip on the back of her neck. She swiped roughly as the spite took to the air, buzzing and chittering. Thanis snarled at it.
That's what you get for trying to bite someone, she said,
and the creature let out a string of what sounded like curses. Then a shadow fell and she looked up.
Strongstem stood over them, his rooted feet planted in the grass. Drink this, he said, placing a sloshing pail before them. Then rise. We have a long way to go.
Thanis felt stiff and cold, her thoughts clouded and worrisome. They were so far from home, at the mercy of beings whose thoughts and actions were utterly unlike anything she was accustomed to. Kiri knelt by the pail, cupping her hands and drinking. It's good. Thanis reached in. The water was ice cold, but the taste was sweet. As she drank, she could feel strength returning to her tired limbs.
Good, Strongstem said as the others drank. Now leave nothing behind. You will not return here.
What about Elio? Alish asked. Can't we say goodbye?
He is with the healers, Strongstem said. He will be far safer than you will be out in the wild.
Thanis felt a shiver, but she gritted her teeth and set off after the tree lord, taking Alish's hand.
Don't be scared, she said. We'll see Elio again, I'm sure of it.
Alish forced a smile.
I think so too. Be Sylvaneth may talk tough, but deep down I think they're on our side.
Again, Strongstem set a punishing pace, following paths only the Sylvaneth knew. The sun shimmered through the branches, life seeming to spring up everywhere the light touched. Purple flowers unfurled from man-high thickets of thorn, puffing out clouds of sharp-smelling pollen. Patches of flaking fungus spread across towering walls of rock, advancing like a hungry green tide. Mushrooms sprouted from patches of boggy marshland, their caps sparkling like blue crystal. And all around them, Thanis heard movement. The swarm of spites and the croak of bullfrogs and flocks of birds in the high branches, their chatter like mocking laughter. Elio would have been able to name them all, she knew, but to her it was just strange and unnerving. Sometime in the late morning, Strongstem's stride slowed and he gestured to a dark green grove of bushes in the shade of a stony outcropping. The branches were weighed down with gleaming black fruits, and Thanis stepped closer to pluck one.
"These are coal apples," the Sylvaneth said. "Your own people planted them long ago. Look."
Following his outstretched limb, Thanis saw that the rocky cliff they were resting against was actually the side of a building, a sigmarite temple half buried in the foliage. Walls and cracked roofs loomed up ahead, dark with moss and strung with shifting creepers. She saw the tip of a tower above the trees, topped with a creaking weather vane in the shape of Gal Maraz, the Hammer of Sigmar. "What was this place?" she asked, taking a bite of the apple, the sour sweet flavour fizzing on her tongue. "It feels sort of familiar, but that's not possible."
"This was the city of Everlight," Strongstem said. "Named for the river that lies across that ridge."
He pointed to a dark rise with clouds gathered at its peak.
"So where did everyone go?" Alish asked.
Strongstem sighed.
"They were destroyed by the same power that once poisoned the forest. Many of them fought with us to drive back the rot, but they were not as strong as we are. They perished, and these ruins are all that remains."
"Is this what's happening in Lifestone?" Kiri asked in a whisper.
"Yes," Thanis thought. That was why the Dead City felt so familiar. It had the same sense of fading grandeur as her home.
"I do not know," Strongstem admitted. "Such things are not my concern. All I can say is the last time I visited your city, it was a place of life and growth, a garden almost fit for Sylvaneth. It would be a shame if Lifestone were to die."
The afternoon was even more arduous than the morning had been, spent scaling walls of rock and breaks of choking trees. Once they were forced to shuffle along a fallen trunk above a rocky ravine, a whirlpool of milky white water churning in the depths below. A coal apple fell from Thanis's pocket, and she saw it spiraling in the current, sucked away into the fathomless dark. The spites clouded around, biting and mocking, until Strongstem made a deep noise in his throat and the little creature swarmed away. On the far side, the ground began to ascend, rising towards the ridge, but as they climbed, Strongstem's pace seemed to slow, his limbs creaking like branches in the wind. Thanis heard a grunt of effort as he stepped over a tumble of boulders before descending carefully on the far side. She was about to ask him what was happening when she heard a gasp. Kiri had frozen in her tracks, looking up to where the trees broke at the top of the ridge. Three figures stood motionless, gazing out into the valley beyond. They were Sylvaneth, their arms upraised, their feet rooted. But as Thanis circled around them, she saw that their eyes were closed, patches of moss and greyish mould growing on their mouths and outstretched fingers. "What happened to them?" she asked, touching the dead bark.
"They are... were...
Sylvaneth," Strongstem said, his voice somehow robbed of its strength.
"They are the reason I have brought you here."
He straightened painfully like an old man with aching joints. Then he pointed down into the valley below. A dark ribbon ran through it between steep forested hills.
"That is the Everlight River, the jewel of this forest. It runs east down to an ancient lake called Roar Deep Mere. The lake is strange somehow. It always was. Not a haunt of evil, but a place of shadows and visions. But in recent times, something has changed. The lake has become sick.
We do not know what or who is responsible because we cannot get close enough to find out. Even here, I can feel a power working inside me, sapping my strength, confusing my thoughts.
He broke off, touching his forehead with one huge hand.
These three are the last Sylvaneth who tried to go any closer. But we do not know what they discovered, because before they could return, their life was taken, the power solidifying them from the inside.
But you think it won't affect us, Kiri realized. You think we could find out what's happening? Strongstem nodded.
You are not as susceptible to mystical energy. You may be able to discover what is poisoning the mirror and return to tell us.
Thanis gave a gulp.
How sure are you that it won't affect us? I mean, I feel all right now, but...
It is a risk you must take, Strongstem told her. For the sake of your friend, you see, there is one more thing. The power that has infected Raw Deep Mere has the same sense, the same smell almost, as the sickness that has attacked your Elio. We do not know how this is possible, but you may find answers at the lake, answers that may lead you to whatever it is that you seek.
Thanis looked up at Strongstem, wondering if the Sylvaneth knew more than he was letting on. But before she could speak, she heard a desperate whining and buzzing, and saw the cloud of spikes around his head whirling madly.
The Tree Lord raised his mighty fists.
Shelter behind me, all of you! Something is coming! Quickly!
The wall of trees exploded as a huge shape emerged onto the ridge, flapping towards them on darkly feathered wings.
It was somehow both bird and beast, rearing up on muscled hind legs and lunging at Strongstem with clawed forearms.
The Sylvaneth took a step back, raising his arms.
Chapter 5. Raw Deep Mere.
A griffin,
Strongstem said, facing the creature.
But look, it has been corrupted too.
The griffin gave a cry, and Thanis saw that it had two hideous heads, each one tipped with a hooked beak smeared with dry blood. Its eyes were black, but in their depths she saw a purple gleam, the same colour as Elio's mark.
It sprang, and the Tree Lord stepped back again. His clenched fists were the size and weight of boulders, but his movements were slow and the creature's claws sunk in, cutting three deep grooves in his exposed forearm. Sap leaked out, running in rivulets to the ground. He took another swing, but the griffin darted aside, slicing down with its beak, worrying the green shoots around Strongstem's torso. He gave a grunt of dismay and retreated another pace. Then he raised his mighty hands, muttering under his breath. Hearing a dry scrape, Thanis looked down. The ground was alive with shifting roots, breaking from the soil and snaking towards the unsuspecting griffin. One of them lashed around its shaggy tail, dragging it backwards. The two heads screeched as the beast kicked furiously, struggling and howling. Then its left side head darted, and the roots flew free, sliced in two by that razor-sharp beak. It kicked, and more of the vines snapped, the great beast fighting free. Strongstem shook his massive head, trying to summon his strength.
He's weak, Casper said. This power must be getting to him.
Thanis gulped. If the Tree Lord lost, the griffin would gulp them down without stopping for breath.
He was stronger back there, she said, gesturing down the slope.
We need to draw it away! She took a step forwards, slamming the staff onto a flat stone. The knock rang out in the still air.
Hey! She shouted.
Over here!
The griffin turned, lowering its heads. Thanis knocked again and Kiri waved her arms. Casper and Alish began to retreat, back towards the line of trees. Then the creature sprang, bounding towards them. Thanis broke, Kiri on her heels. They sprinted for the tree line, the monster right behind them. Thanis felt its hot breath on her neck as they scrabbled down the slope. She swiped back with the staff and felt it make contact. The griffin shrieked as the trees closed in. Then she heard a shout and saw Casper standing frozen, his eyes wide. Alice stopped too, and Thanis turned, skidding in the dust, using the staff to keep herself upright. The griffin was still lunging at them, its beak snapping.
but it was no longer advancing. It was held in place, claws scrabbling at the ground. Raising her head, Thanis saw Strongstem standing firm, his feet planted in the earth and his massive fist wrapped around the creature's tail. The beast turned, snapping furiously. Strongstem opened his hand and the griffin sprang free. The tree lord drew himself up, working his shoulders, loosening his stiffened limbs. Then he drove his fists together, once, twice, with a sound like falling boulders. The griffin accepted his challenge, springing forward with its beaks raised for the attack. But Strongstem's fists swept from both sides at once, pinning the creature between them. Thanis saw its eyes bulge as its twin heads slammed together. The griffin reeled, wings flapping as it tried to retreat. Strongstem swung again, upwards this time, knocking the creature off its feet and into the air. The griffin twisted, beating its wings desperately. It gave a shriek of rage, then it lifted, flapping raggedly, into the darkening sky. They saw it rise above the ridge, struggling to clear the tops of the trees. It gave a last squawk of pain and fury. Then it was gone. Strongstem sank back, sitting so hard that the ground shook.
"Thank you," he said. "I could not have fought it alone."
He stared after the griffin, his eyes brimming with anger. "There was a noble beast once, a hunter of the high passes. How did it come to be here so far from home? The dark power must have lured it somehow, twisting it out of shape. It is spreading." He looked at them, his eyes reflecting the last light of the sinking sun.
"Go," he said. "Follow the river. Find out who did this so we can tear them apart."
Kiri shouldered her pack and Alish tightened her tool belt. Casper raised his hood and Thanis reached out to touch Strongstem on the arm.
"We won't let you down," she promised.
The way down to the valley floor was part climb, part scramble, the children clinging to the rocks and roots as they descended towards the Everlight River. The sky was fading as they broke out onto the bank, the rush of water loud in their ears. Thanis looked back to the dark ridge where Strongstem waited, but they were on their own now. If they got into trouble, he wouldn't be able to help them. They followed the river downstream, clambering over boulders and through patches of muddy mire, shinning down the sheer sides of shallow waterfalls and skirting silent pools. The water was black beneath a darkening sky, but as the moon rose, a change came over the river. In its depths were little sparks of light, circling as they were swept on the current. And as night deepened, the river came alive, glowing with dancing shards of bluish white, like fragments of trapped moonbeam. "Are those things alive?" Thanis asked, peering into the gleaming water. A shape rose to the surface, opening its mouth to swallow a swirling speck. The fish's face glowed for a moment, beams shining from its open eyes. Then it swallowed and the light was gone. After a while, the river opened out, rolling between banks of sedge grass and rustling broomweed. Kiri strode on ahead, eager to find the lake and get this done. Alish hung close to Thanis, convinced that the griffin was about to reappear, or some other creature just as hideous. Casper brought up the rear, and when Thanis glanced back, she saw his hand inside his robe again, touching the pendant around his neck. Suddenly she thought of the pyramid Kiri had given him, a gift from some mysterious apothecary she'd met in Lifestone, a woman who claimed to be Casper's mother. Could that be it? Then Kiri gave a shout, squinting in the hazy light. There was a mound of earth on the riverbank and she began to climb, beckoning as she reached the top.
"Quick, look at this! It's horrible!"
Thanis clambered up, Alish close behind her. The mound was just the start of it. Up ahead was a series of huge wooden structures, like walls planted in the earth. Only they weren't walls, Thanis saw. They were a dam, built to block the course of the Everlight River and divert it into a great channel leading south into the forest.
"Someone's moved the river," Casper said in amazement. "Why would they?"
"To do that," Kiri said. "Look."
Ahead was the old riverbed, a dry conduit lined with stones and gravel. And beyond that was a great hole in the earth,
a deep crater of sloping mud and rocky inclines, so huge and deep that Thanis couldn't even see the bottom, let alone the other side.
Raw deep mere, Alish said. They've drained the whole lake. But why?
I don't know, Kiri said, but I know where to look for answers. In the distance was a faint purple glow, the same colour as the mark on Elio's forehead, and the light in the griffin's eyes. It shone in the bed of the lake, pulsating silently.
Come on, Thanis said. Let's get closer.
They clambered down to the dry riverbed. The huge earthworks loomed over them, the wooden walls held up by stanchions sunk into the ground. The water inside was deafening, rushing and roaring as it was diverted from its natural course into that wide purpose-built channel. The empty lake stretched ahead of them, patches of mud and rotten weeds interspersed with narrow expanses of stony ground. They followed one of these, hurrying towards the purple gleam in the distance. There were shapes half sunk into the mud, the rotting carcasses of water-going beasts, their exposed bones gleaming in the moonlight. The smell was hideous. A shadow blocked the moon, and Thanis looked up to see a black hulk standing over them. The side of a ship, gleaming with barnacles and black weeds. There was a hole in the stern, and she realised the craft must have been sunk here centuries before, perhaps during the same conflict that had wiped out the population of Everlight. There were forms scattered in the mud around the ship's prow, objects of white and bronze. Drawing closer, she saw empty eye sockets and jutting ribs, skulls encased in battered helmets, and skeletal hands clutching rusty swords. They had drowned or died in battle. Their bones lay on the bottom of the mere. She wondered if they were noble or cruel, fighting to protect the realm or destroy it. It didn't much matter. They were dead either way. The glow on the horizon was brighter now, shafts of purple light filling the air. They crunched across the lake bed on a floor of loose stone, keeping their heads low and trying to stay quiet. Another shape rose over them, some kind of blubbery freshwater leviathan, its black eyes turned to the moonlit sky. Its pointed carapace ringed with clusters of bright red tentacles. Was it her imagination, Thanis wondered, or did she see one of them move? A sound was beginning to build ahead of them, a deep, regular thump that shook the ground. They picked up the pace, crossing the shingle to a cluster of high rocks. They clambered up, peering over the edge. What they saw took their breath away. In the violet glow, 1,000 feet moved in lockstep. Swords rattled and shields clanked, and ragged banners hung limp in the windless air. A dark army was on the march. The soldiers moved with a strange, jerky gait, shuffling along a wide stone causeway that ran across the lake bed. Then the moon emerged from behind a cloud, and Alice stifled a cry. "They're dead," she managed, her face a mask of horror. She was right. They were dead walkers. Corpses animated by some grim magic. The dry skin stretched like parchment over their emaciated frames. They were led by a tall figure on horseback, a skeletal general, his skull gleaming in the moonlight.
"Move, you stinking bone bags!"
he cried, his harsh voice ringing in the stillness. Behind them came another phalanx of dark shapes. These seemed to drift above the ground, black cloaks flapping raggedly even though there was no wind. They carried pale steel scythes, and beneath their hoods, Thanis could see nothing but darkness.
"Night horns from Shyish," Casper whispered. "The realm of death."
"And that must be their realm gate," Kiri said, pointing. The spectral soldiers had emerged from a huge hole sunk into the bottom of the mere. It lay on an angle, open to the sky, more like a mouth than a cave, Thanis thought, ringed with jagged rocks like great black teeth. The violet light pulsated from inside, making the walls gleam like a huge gullet. The air seemed thick somehow, waves of dark power radiating from within.
Warpstone, she realised aloud. It was the same sensation they'd felt in the Skaven Warren as the Packlord Creech revealed his warpstone crystal. Kiri nodded grimly.
"That whole tunnel must be made of it. It must be why they drained the lake, to get to the crystal and open the gate." "But who?" Alish asked. "Who would have such power?"
Kiri got to her feet, gritting her teeth. That's what we're here to find out. We have to get closer. Alice gasped in dismay, and Casper shook his head. You're mad! There are thousands of them! Kiri's right, Thanis said. Strongstem told us we had to find out who was poisoning his forest. That was his price for healing Elio. So let's go back and tell him what we've seen, Casper hissed. He can find a way to come down here and kill whoever it turns out to be. No, Kiri said. Don't you see? It's all connected. This dark army. I'd bet my slingshot they're the same ones besieging Lifestone. And this warpstone looks like the same stuff Creech was given for taking Vertigan.
Which means that whoever drained the lake and dug up the crystal also has our master. That person must be here, I'm sure of it. Which means...
With a lurch, Thanis saw what she was getting at.
Which means Vertigan could be here too.
Kiri nodded. We have to look. We don't have a choice.
Casper sighed, clutching his chest. All right. But don't say I didn't warn you.
Chapter 6. Ashnag. They scrambled down a shelf of rock and crouched in the shadows. Between them and the giant rocky moor, the ground was scattered with scree and boulders. But the moon was bright, and the warpstone glow filled the air, pulsating from the cavern.
Casper, which way? Kiri asked.
He frowned, pointing.
That big rock ought to hide us, but we need to stay low and move fast.
Thanis squeezed his shoulder.
The realm's best sneak, she said, and he smiled worriedly.
Casper led the way, and Thanis and the others followed, ducking through the maze of boulders towards the tall, jagged rock. They huddled behind it, barely daring to breathe. Casper peered round the edge.
I think we can make it down to that pile of stones, he gestured. From there we should be able to see.
There was a crunch nearby, and he clamped his mouth shut. The sound came again, footsteps drawing closer. Then a voice rang out, and they shrank back into the boulder's shadow.
Anything moving?
It said, a dry, icy rasp that made Thanis shiver. More footsteps approached.
Nothing,
a feminine voice replied, as cold and lifeless as the first.
This place is deader than Shyesh. What I do not understand,
the first voice said,
is why the mistress feels the need to bring in more of these filthy corpses. We could overrun that feeble city in half a day. Why does she delay?
The female hissed.
It is not your place to question, Ashnak. She will attack when she's ready. I think there's something there that she needs, the other mused. Something within Lifestone that is important to her. We could take it for ourselves and...
Thanis heard a thud and a scuffle.
One more word and I would turn you to dust. Do not question the mistress. Now come. There's no one out here.
They moved away, their boots crunching on the scree. Casper leaned out, Kiri and Thanis watching over his shoulder. The figures were heavily armoured, dark hair hanging over their broad shoulders. They had pale skin and wore long red cloaks. Soul blights, Casper whispered when they were out of sight. Undead blood suckers.
This just gets better.
Thanis frowned at him.
How do you know so much about all these dead things?
Casper hesitated for a moment. Then he exposed the mark on his wrist. After Vertigan told me I was marked for Shyesh, I asked him what kind of place it was. I soon wish I hadn't. He told me all about Nagash, the Lord of Death, about the Night Haunts with their frightful touch and the soul blight vampires who prey on the living. They must be acting as sentries for whoever's behind this.
I think I might know who that is, Alice said. Look.
She pointed, and Thanis lifted her head, gazing up past the boulder, past the shuffling army. Yes, she thought. That's who we've been looking for. The figure hung in midair, suspended in the mouth of the warpstone tunnel. Her eyes were closed, and her skin seemed to glow from within. A light that pulsated with the waves of power flowing from the walls of crystal. Shapes moved around her. Limbless spectres with red eyes and nebulous bodies holding her aloft. She seemed to be feeding on the warpstone,
streams of energy flowing into the tips of her fingers. Casper shuddered, shrinking back, but Kiri was nodding, her eyes wide. That's her. That night in Lifestone, when Vertigan came after me, the night he was taken, she was there. She's the Hooded Lady.
Did Vertigan tell you anything about her? Thanis asked.
Kiri shook her head. No, he wouldn't. He said it was too soon or something. But they knew each other from old times, and he did tell me she was dangerous. He was very clear on that.
And he was right, a voice said, and they looked up. The Hooded Lady's eyes were open, shafts of purple energy slanting from them like light through clouds. She was a long way off, but her voice was somehow close, as though she was speaking inside their heads. Welcome, all of you, she said, giving the most chilling smile that Thanis had ever seen. I've been so looking forward to this. Slowly, she began to float down towards them, the army passing beneath her feet, those formless shapes coiling around her body. Thanis wanted to pull away, to hide or to run, but she found herself frozen. She glanced at the others. They, too, were pinned in place, staring helplessly.
I am the sorceress Ashnak, the woman said. Do not trouble to introduce yourselves. Your names are known to me. Kiri, the outsider. Alish, the inventor. Thanis, the fighter. Casper, the thief.
She looked at each of them in turn, pausing for a moment on Casper's face.
I also know of the marks you each bear and the reason your master brought you together.
Thanis fought against the binding spell, sweat pouring down her face. By sheer force of will, she managed to raise Vertigan's staff.
You know who this belonged to, she said, pushing the words out. You took our master. Give him back!
The sorceress tilted her head.
You're a brave little thing, aren't you?
Trust me. You shouldn't start a fight you have no way of winning.
Thanis gritted her teeth.
We'll find Vertigan, she managed, and he will destroy you.
With a surge of effort, she reached out, grasping Kiri by the arm. Immediately, she felt the spell weaken, her own strength returning. Kiri reached for Alish, moving as though underwater, fighting the sorceress for every inch. Then her hand locked around the girl's birthmark, and the three of them were joined. Thanis turned to Casper, nodding to her arm. Take it, she said. We need you too. But he just looked at her, his eyes wide beneath his hood. I can't, he said. I'm too afraid.
And you are right to be, Ashnak growled, staring furiously down at them. She clasped her hands together, and Thanis saw light inside them, a ball of energy growing between her fingers. She turned her hands, and the power exploded outwards, a ball of fire blazing through the night air. It bore the image of a screaming skull, mouth wide and howling as it streaked towards them. Thanis felt the combined power gather in her veins and directed it into Vertigan's staff. She brought it up, and the fireball impacted against it, shattering into 1,000 tattered fragments. From the tip of the staff, a light blazed, a blinding whiteness edged with violet, as though it had absorbed the fireball's power and turned it back, sending it blazing into the night air. The sorceress gasped, shielding her eyes. The wraiths surrounding her howled and shrieked, forced back by the light flaring from the staff.
Then it was gone, and so was Ashnak. Driven away towards the cave. Thanis let go of Kiri's arm. She looked at the staff in amazement. I didn't know it could do that. Kiri grinned.
Now let's go. We've seen what we needed to see. But Casper still stood frozen, staring down into the bottom of the lake. Following his gaze, Thanis felt her blood freeze.
Complete silence had fallen. The army of the dead had ceased marching. Instead, they stood facing back up the rise, countless empty eye sockets turned in the children's direction. The dead walkers took a step in unison, then another. Then they raised their arms and broke formation, shuffling with surprising speed over the uneven ground.
Thanis grabbed Casper's arm. Run!
Chapter 7. Tentacles. As they scrambled across open ground, they could hear the Dark Army pursuing them, the dead walkers moaning as they came. Thanis grabbed Alish, hoisting the girl onto her shoulders.
I'm okay, she protested. I can run.
I know, Thanis said, but I can run faster.
They broke around the tumble of high rocks, struggling through a sump of clinging mud. The dead walkers were gaining, moving in shuffling gangs to cut them off. Kiri slipped, splashing down, but Casper hoisted her to her feet, and they kept running. His eyes were filled with a wild fear that Thanis had never seen before, and she wondered why he'd refused to take her wrist, why the sorcerer's eyes had lingered on his face. But there was no time to talk about it now. She felt bony fingers clutching at her sleeve. A dead walker was veering towards her, trying to pull her down. She drove the staff into its torso, and it fell on its backside, one leg detaching and rolling into the mire. But more of the creatures were advancing on all sides, led by the skeletal warrior on his fleshless horse.
After them, you measly rocksacks!
He cried out.
For Ashnak!
He dug in his spurs, and the dead horse whinnied, charging through the mud towards them.